Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to Part 2 of The Rut. I am back here a day later with Alan Dimmock of Rugby World and Mike Aylwin of How Long Have We Got? The Observer, Sport 500 website, and author of a new book which we're about to discuss. Okay, we're going to do our Team of the Week now, and you listeners will have noticed they haven't heard the voice of Steve Jones today. Apologies for that. I'm sure you can cope with it, but if you can't, here is his Team of the Week. By the way, Steve...
Can you do it in an accent? Welsh accent?
I've got to sound a bit pissed off with life as well, haven't
yeah.
I?
And you can do that.
And my feet have got to grow by at least six sizes to match him. This is Stephen Jones's Team of the Week. Fullback. He has Stuart Hogg, or brackets, or Rob Carney. And a note of interest here. Anyone going for Brown after five clean catches unopposed of high kicks should be asked to leave the studio.
Right, I'm going.
His other wings, his wings are Teddy Thomas and Johnny May. In the midfield, Owen Farrell at 12, Hugh Jones at 13.
Okay.
He's gone for the England halfbacks, Danny Kerr and George Ford. In the pack, front row of Nicola Quaglio, the Italian.
He went off at half time.
Well, you said you're expecting a bombshell, and there it is, Alan. Guillaume Garrido at hooker, Samson Lee at tight head. His locks are the Frenchman Ituria, who I thought had a great game as well, and Scott Grant Kilchrist. Back row, Aaron Shingler, Hamish Watson, and Ryan Wilson. What do we think of that, boys?
Ooh. Not sure about Ryan Wilson.
Well, who would you have gone for at eight?
Tricky.
Robshaw?
As mentioned, I sort of felt almost inclined to go for Sam Simmons, but I've gone for Jack Conan, but it's not from a particularly
impressive... He also went off at
impressive.
Half-time.
Did
Do you
he?
Know, I chose a team...
Well, I picked for those lovely hands in the build-up.
I mean, that was a great wraparound from Murray for his try, to be fair.
I chose a team without any Irishman in. I just thought that their game was irrelevant, and we couldn't... The only Irishman I have there in brackets... as a possibility for inclusion is Conor Murray as a lock, because I enjoyed jumping at the line out, which we've already discussed.
And only because I like him, and after a slightly shaky first game, he scored a nice try or two, did he? But Jacob Stockdale, I think.
He got two, yeah.
I mean, I know Johnny May scored two tries, but I don't... Actually, he did finish
the thing about Johnny May's try is only he would have got it, or only... He got there just.
That first try was good pace.
That was pure gas, wasn't it?
But what was class was, the way he finished it. I mean, forget the pace, but just it was awkward. A bobbling ball on a wet day, and it was a few metres out, so he did the old slide in from 5 yards.
I'm annoyed to say that I agree with a lot of Jonesy's selections in the backs. I think he's got the second row wrong, though. I don't think you can leave Joe Launchbury out of that.
I also thought that
as a leader of men and as a performance, Alan Wynne Jones was pretty titanic on Saturday.
Yeah,
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that he's given Grant Gilchrist a nod, and that was a game that Grant Gilchrist had to put in for Scotland. He's been in and out for a while. This is a guy who'd been earmarked to be Scotland's captain. Vern Cotter had picked him as captain, and then he got an injury that knocked him out of play for a long time. And he's worked his way back, and there were question marks with him over Edinburgh, how things were going there. There was chat of him moving abroad that never came up, and so for him to work his way back, that's great. But I agree with you. Launchbury and Alan Wynne-Jones, I mean, that's just test class.
Yeah, I mean, I've gone for the Launchbury and Gilchrist. I know. Well, yeah, I was having this debate with your conversation with your esteemed editor Mockers yesterday as we walked away. Can you put Launchbury and Gilchrist into the same team? I mean, I think you can, especially if it's some theoretical side like this.
I'll tell you who needs a special mention actually, and I'm ashamed that I've not seen enough of him, and I think he's got a very bright future for France. Yacouba Camara.
At seven.
I just, the way he plays, it's the way he extends himself into contact and steps away from people. I described him yesterday as trying to tackle a swinging axe, because there's just so many moving parts to him, and each of them can hurt you. I just think he's got a fantastic future, and it's one of these things where you look at France's back row and where they can and should be, and I suppose actually you could include Ituria in that one, and the way he plays at the breakdown in particular. There's got to be a little glimmer of hope there for France for the future.
Well, their first half, they played like the old France, didn't they? I mean,
I mean, it was two brilliant runs down the right.
It's a lovely stereotype to be able to apply. The old France is back, and then in the second half, the new France was back. They went, oh, hang on a sec, we don't know how to win a game, so let's give it to the others.
I'm going to stand my ground before I'm evicted from this studio and insist on Mike Brown over Stuart Hogg. The first duty... And again, if you're an international coach, this is what you consider rather than all the frippery around the rest of it. The first duty is A, to be a rock under the high ball, B, to be sound in defence. Stuart Hogg was beaten with too much ease by Teddy Thomas for that first try. And he's just not good enough in defence. Mike Brown was a rock and he's... not as good. Of course he's not as good as Stuart Hogg in attack. But I do think, as a fullback...
We need to go through those high ball takes that he made, because Jones is right that a lot of them, he had a clean ball and there wasn't a Welsh player within 5 yards of him.
A lot of them, but a lot of them, that's not the case. And in a wet day, you wouldn't want, for example, Anthony Watson doing that.
I mean, I appreciate... what Brown did in that game. I think I'm more drawn to him purely because I want to join Eddie Jones' bandwagon.
Well, look, my conscience is clear over this.
If you join his bandwagon, you're allowed to call him Uncle Eddie, Alan Wynne.
I'll tell you what, though, looking through this whole list, and he's in Steve's team, and it's the one player where one of the hallmarks of the Six Nations is that a lot of people that do not regularly watch rugby watch the Six Nations, and they want to be thrilled, and they want to meet new heroes that they didn't know anything about. These last two games, Teddy Thomas has done something for France and for the Six Nations that has to be applauded. He's as elusive as that second sock in the laundry. You just can't find him. And the way he ghosted past Scotland to score those two tries. Now, the bouncing ball in front of Greg Laidlaw, where he was at six or sevens, and if he just caught it full face with a volley, would have kicked it out of the park, and Thomas wouldn't have scored another try. But the way he's played in these last two games, you've got to say it's fantastic for the tournament.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. I mean, France needs to develop some other way of attacking, because that's three tries scored by the same bloke. All of them really ultimately solo efforts. Again, Finn Russell's first up tackle. I mean, I know he's not a winger, Finn Russell, and he found himself out there, but he was beaten.
He got stupid.
Do you not see a bit of shape and understanding and structure and form about France over two games?
I've seen them both. I think they have got a willing defence. I'm not sure I have seen an awful lot. I mean, they didn't do any attacking of any note in that first game until... what's his face? Dupont set Thomas away with a beautiful sidestep and give. It's true, but
do you not think there are hints in there? For example, we saw players giving tip on passes that you would not have expected.
Yeah, Chavon Sears had a nice little
Slimani with a loop. You would not have expected that from the France of last Six Nations. I don't know. I just think there's little things in there.
I don't get me wrong.
I'm just being romantic.
Mike's our France specialist, and he's just buried them.
I certainly don't mean to bury them. I mean, I think there's something for them.
You can't disinter them. They're down now.
They are. Thomas is standing out too much.
What you can tell us is in the future if they'll be out of it. But anyway, we'll talk about that now. You're listening to The Ruck, and we are back after this. Welcome back to The Ruck. And don't forget, you can sign up for the brand new Ruck email. Subscribers can go to thetimes.co.uk/bulletins. OK, I think now we need to explain this preposterous giggling over the year 2144 and the fact that Mike knows what's going to be happening there. So, Mike, congratulations. You have a new book published called Ivon. And Ivon is not a well-worked theme in literature. To my knowledge, it's the first work of fiction about the game of rugby set in the year 2144.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
It sits on the shelf on its own in that respect.
Futuristic sports dystopia.
Okay,
is what they're calling it.
Well,
it's a new genre.
I would say to listeners that I would highly recommend it, and it is really interesting. I'll just tell you a little bit about it. It's year 2144. The world at this stage, according to Mike, is powered by sport, politically and practically. Each community owns its prosperity or otherwise the success of its teams and athletes, and a person's class is determined by their aptitude for sport. Is that really no different to now? Anyway, that's one point. Apart from in Wales, Wales is separated from England by a huge wall, which I love. Can't come soon enough.
Yeah, I don't know if Don's listening to this, but Don Trump, I'm talking about, obviously, if he could hurry up and build his wall.
Does he build the wall?
Well, he's got this wall coming up, isn't he, from in Mexico-USA border. So it would make it current, wouldn't it?
In 2144, the Welsh still have old values of loving sport for play. They carouse, they live, they love, they have fun. So that's 2144. That's 2144 covered, so we know what's happening then.
Yeah.
So what interests me, this brings us on to something I find really interesting. Professional rugby's been with us for 20 years, or 22 years to be more precise. The game's changed quite a lot. Where do we think it's going to be in 20 more years' time? Because I think the professional rugby has got to a stage where it really doesn't work anymore on a number of counts, and something's going to happen. Something's going to have to happen. So with the benefit of our tea leaves and just imagining the future, how do you think this game will look?
Well, I think there'll be a super league based on in England and France. Essentially, all the world's best players will play in it. Every other league will be a feeder league, and the prospect I find desperately worrying.
Will there be a salary cap in this league, or will they just go screw it?
No, well, I mean,
and will Saracens care?
Well, exactly.
Wasps got caught out.
Yeah, Wasps have just
this
been
week.
Good point. Wasps got fined last week for breaking the salary cap, but apparently you can break the salary cap these days, and it's just a minor accounting error rather than
It's a minor accounting error, and it just so happens that it was announced during a Six Nations weekend where England were playing Wales. Okay.
England announced their team, wasn't it? It was the classic bearing of bad news. But Mike, I think I think that's where the game is going.
My other fear is that, so you say in 20 years' time, I reckon England will have won four of the preceding five World Cups.
Who gets the other one? Tell us, Samoa,
I think England will win two in a row now. So I think they're going to win in Japan, and I think they'll win 4 years later, and then they'll probably mess up the hat-trick. I don't know.
Why is that? Because they'll bring back an Englishman to coach
them
or something.
Well, I don't, just for the sake of variety.
Well, you guys have taken this to a dark place. I was a bit more flippant when I was filling out what I thought was going to happen in 20 years' time. For one, I believe that Georgia will be unbeaten at home in 20 years' time, no matter who they play. The All Blacks will visit and they'll beat them. England will visit, they'll beat them, but they will still be playing in a second-tier international tournament. I also believe that USA and Canada will be no better internationally than they are now.
Because I was going to, I've got another one which is actually a hope, because at the moment I'm worried that everything's just concertinaing around England and France, or internationally around England. The hope lies in the USA and Japan. If they can rouse themselves, engage with the sport, and so I reckon after so the next World Cup in 20 years' time will be 2039, the sixth World Cup, I think that is. I reckon the final, I hope the final, will be Japan against USA.
I like that vision. I don't think that's going to happen.
I love that. I love that vision. I, again, being positive as well, I truly hope that in 20 years' time, scrums are sexy again. People love, that's what people want to see in rugby. Yeah. People are fans just of that aspect of rugby.
Jesus. And I preferred your vision and, of England winning four World Cups.
And the phrase, spirit of the game, has been abolished after the Twickenham riots of 2031, in which a 3D TMO decision still gets it wrong in an England versus Wales match.
Well, we discussed that. That's not going to happen, is it? Because Mike's got his touchpads. Yeah. Anyway, listen, this is what I foresee. In 5 to 10 years' time, players will by that stage be so fast and so powerful, and defences will be so good, that there will be a meeting of World Rugby and all its leading people, and they will decide that rugby union becomes a 13-man game.
Well, yes.
And by that stage,
will there be a fight between the hardliners that will want a bigger pitch and some that will just want fewer players on it?
Oh, I see. So you're like on a sort of a massive beach in Cornwall or something with
Well, there's another rupture in the game where some people go, we're going to keep 15, but it's going to be on a bigger pitch.
Oh, maybe this is what we could organise. Yeah. We need to stick our flag in the sand and invent a new game called 15-man rugby.
Yeah.
Another one. This, maybe 20 years is too soon. 50 years, I reckon, performance-enhancing drugs will be legal.
Who invited this man here?
Insanity.
Okay. My other thing, which is a question, but at what point does the professional game come completely different to the amateur schoolboy club game? At what point do you need a license to play schoolboy rugby, or is the tackle banned from schoolboy rugby? Oh, the boys have gone quiet. I don't like this. Let's stick with legalised doping in 50 years' time.
Science will find a way of making these drugs safe to use. And then you've got to argue about why this artificial performance enhancement is any different from any other form of artificial performance enhancement, which are rife.
What, like going to the gym?
Something like cryotherapy, for example.
No, I think you're right.
Is an artificial enhancement of performance. Other than the fact there are no ingredients invading your body, and therefore there's presumably no health.
But you've got painkillers as well.
Well, you've done a big investigation into that. But I mean, you know, that's illegal.
Let's not go there. Let's just wrap it up. This episode of the podcast was brought to you by three people who were totally unenhanced, I think it was fair to say.
Yes.
Mike, thank you for coming.
Thank
with your
you for
vision
having me.
With the future. Al, great to see you again. We'll be back next week. I have to add an apology, because this time last week I promised we were going to obey and read more the emails that have been clogging up our new emails. The Ruck at thetimes.co.uk. We do really enjoy your emails, so please keep them coming, and we will do a session next week. We'll talk about the points that people have brought up and bring our wider audience back in the conversation. Thanks for listening. Come back next week and see you then.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.